and more people are going cashless these days, and some businesses are following the trend. What does that mean for our economy and our personal finances? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about the implications of a cashless society are Miami University Associate Professor of Economics, Ijindu Ume. Welcome, Professor Ume.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. And Street Vibes distributor, James Davis. Thanks for being here, James.
Hi. How you doing? Thank you for inviting me.
It's great to have you both.
Great to be here.
Yeah. EJ, people are increasingly are paying with credit cards and e-wallets. Nobody seems to have cash these days. Why is that? Why are so many people doing their transactions that way, EJ?
That's a great question. I mean, we see this trend towards a cashless society happening pretty much globally, right? Especially in developed nations. But a lot of this has to do with technological innovation that we've experienced over the past, say, 40 years that has sort of shifted us towards this cashless environment. More payment apps have come to the forefront, more online banking, just a lot of more digital platforms are being developed due to the technological advancements. But in addition to that, we also saw that COVID-19 sort of expedited this pace towards a cashless society, given that people were concerned with, you know, passing on the virus with physical currency. There was a lot of movement towards, again, creating more of this digital infrastructure.
And EJ, how quickly do you think the United States could become completely cashless? Do you think we're headed that way?
That's a great question. I think we're moving in that direction. I don't know exactly how long it would take. We have Sweden as an example, as sort of the first country to become a cashless society. So we have a case point to look at. Can we catch up with Sweden? Potentially. I think we still have a lot of individuals in the U.S. who are unbanked and who also prefer to use cash. I don't know if that's going to disappear. So, you know, will we be completely cashless? Maybe not, but will we get pretty close? Maybe 80, 90% of our transactions being cashless? I could see that maybe in the near future.
James, I know you distribute the newspaper Street Vibes, and people can buy that for a couple dollars. What's the experience that you have that other distributors have? Do fewer people have cash on hand to buy the paper?
Yeah, that's correct. We have, since we're a nonprofit organization, you know, we deal strictly with cash. So, and the people that buy Street Vibes newspaper, they generally don't carry cash. You know, they have credit cards, and, you know, we have to go through transactions over the phone, you know, through our phones and our accounts. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's a lot of steps to do when you can just, you know, tangible cash is, you know, just hand it, you know, straight over and just buy the paper right out, you know. And as something else, it kind of gets to me because, you know, you can't, you know, the United States was built, you know, on the dollar. You know, on the dollars and cents. So, you know, why take that away? And a lot of stores out there still doesn't take credit cards, you know, the cash only. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of like you're cornering the people, you know, as far as cash money. You know, you can't, you know, it's hard on there. And, you know, the lower income people, they have to have cash.
Right.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's tangible. You want it on you, you know, because you need it right then and there, you know. It's a must. It's really a must.
Though. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
yeah.
And I know whenever I'm buying Street Vibes, I always use cash. Are you saying that you can? I mean, does anybody ever say, hey, can I Venmo you some money?
Yeah,
is there
they do.
A way to do it over the phone?
Yes, they do, yeah.
And Street Vibes distributors can take that kind of payment?
Well, yeah, if you have it on your phone.
Okay.
Yeah,
right. But I guess, do all Street Vibes distributors have like a smartphone
they
with
don't.
Those apps and
they
all
don't.
That stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, some don't even have a phone, so, you know. So I mean, it's hard on them, you know, because they're out there every day, you know, trying their hardest, you know, to bring the paper up and, you know, Street Vibes. So, you know, it's kind of like we're cornered, you know, it's a corner thing, you know.
Yeah.
We have to have cash.
Yeah.
We just have to have it. It's a must. It's a must. So,
EJ, you mentioned people who were unbanked. I mean, there are millions of people in the United States who don't have bank accounts and need cash for that reason. But who are the people who benefit most from going cashless, from a cashless society?
Yeah, that, I think the people who benefit most are those who are already sort of connected to the financial system and who participate in sort of this digital revolution in the sense that we think that this trend towards this digital infrastructure has led to a credit expansion. There are some who have been left behind as it relates to this credit expansion, and some who have benefited from this credit expansion. So, you know, those who are already connected to the system and also who are currently adopting and using these platforms to sort of enhance their access to financial services stand to benefit at the expense of perhaps some others in the population.
I imagine the banks benefit quite a bit too, don't they, EJ?
That's true as well, right? So that's there are a lot of benefits as it relates to having a cashless economy in the sense that it makes things a lot more efficient, right? We reduce the cost of having to handle physical cash, for an example. So this makes things really cost effective for banks. It makes things really cost effective for those households and individuals who use these products, right? It's less time intensive as it relates to having to use cash. So there are a number of different benefits that come along with sort of going towards this cashless economy. But also there are major concerns that we also have to be concerned with, right? We also have to be concerned with some of the points that were just raised as it relates to some people being left behind, right? And to the extent, again, is that this is leading to a credit expansion. And we have a segment of the population, say roughly 5% of the U.S. households are unbanked, right? These individuals may not, again, be able to partake in this upside. And so we kind of have a situation in which we could have widening inequality as a result. So some will benefit and some will lose, unfortunately.
Yeah. We're talking about the implications of a cashless society. You can join the conversation. Just email talk@wvxu.org. James, who do you think are the people who would suffer the most if cash went away?
Well, the unfortunate, the lower class people, they're going to suffer. They're really going to suffer. And then that's going to bring a lot of, the people are going to get agitated. You know, they're going to get mad and, they're going to go out and do foolish things, And then the crime rate, I know it's going to go sky high. Mm-hmm. It's going to go sky high because if you take the money away, people are just going to, they're going to go mad. So, it's a good thing that they leave it like it is, cash out here. And I tell you, the people, the older generation, they get like Social Security, and disability and things like that. It's great that they have, a bank account, and direct deposit. Then you can use your card, to get cash out of the machine, mm-hmm. Which is good. This is great, it's the same thing, it's having cash on hand. So, I know do you agree with that, EJ? Brother EJ?
I do. Yeah. I do.
Okay.
And to add to that, some of the demographic groups that we see who are more reluctant to use these digital systems or may be unconnected to the formal economy, or older individuals who are less likely to adopt these new technologies, and then also minorities, Blacks and Hispanics, are more likely to rely on cash and are less likely to adopt some of these technologies. So we have certain demographic groups that obviously will be adversely impacted. The effects differ across demographic groups. And I'll also say that, in addition to individuals sort of opting for this cashless environment because it kind of reduces transaction costs and things for them. Yeah. Now, on the firm side, firms are also sort of moving towards this direction. As we've seen the use of cash decrease, the incentive for firms to accept cash has also decreased in the sense that it becomes more costly for firms if the percent of cash transactions fall below a certain threshold in terms of total transactions. Now they're making an economic decision. Okay, does the benefit sort of outweigh the cost? Or vice versa. And so we see firms making economic decisions as it relates to stock, the decision to stop accepting cash.
We got an email from Nicholas. Nicholas writes, Philadelphia tried to go cashless several years ago. It was ruled illegal. He read that about that in an NPR article in 2019. Not everyone has a bank account. There are many people who are unbanked in New York City, in the New York City metro area where I grew up. The amount of check cashing stores there is crazy. I guess I wonder, EJ, could there be legal problems with trying to go completely cashless?
Well, I definitely think that, there would be a certain segment of the population who would be up in arms. How far that goes from a legal standpoint, I'm not clear. But there could be some legal complications as it relates to that. again, you know, a number of people who are unbanked and sort of cash only, that's a large population. So, you know, if we're moving in this direction from a policy standpoint, you know, we want to take advantage of the upside, but we also want to balance the downside risk, right? We want to take care of the population of individuals who are unbanked. And how do we do that? Well, we got to think about some of the reasons why they're unbanked, right? A lot of these individuals, quote, not having enough money, not having enough resources to meet the minimum requirements as sort of the number one reason for being unbanked. And if you look a little deeper at the cash only unbanked, a lot of them don't trust banks, right? So if from a policy standpoint, I think we've got to do more to encourage people to build trust, figure out ways to build trust in banks, and also demonstrate the value that banks have, making them more comfortable to use these platforms.
In the next part of our show, we're going to be talking with Congressman Warren Davidson about the Payment Choice Act. That's legislation that would require businesses to accept cash for transactions that are valued at $500 or less. EJ, do you think that's a good idea? Do you think something like that would work?
I do. I think something like that would work. You know, from a policy standpoint, regulations such as that mandating that firms or companies accept cash is a good move. To protect those vulnerable populations that we discussed previously. I'd also say you could also provide incentives, right? Various incentives to these firms to incentivize them to accept cash, right? So there are multiple ways in which you can go about it, but that's definitely a good idea.
James, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, because, we went up there to Miami University. We did a seminar, and the students were very generous. You know, they gave us a lot, you know, lots of donations, and it was really great. It was great. It was a feeling, you know, deep inside, a warm feeling inside. You know, that the students, you know, are they're conscious, you know, of homelessness, you know, everywhere around the world.
Yeah.
You know, and it fills my heart to just know that people, you know, are understanding of homelessness, you know, because a lot of people out here in the world, they're not homeless by choice. Mm-hmm. They're really not, you know, because it's a lot of people that out there that has mental problems, you know, and they shouldn't be on the streets anyway, period. You know, they shut down all the mental places, facilities here, you know, pretty much, you know. Because my sister, I used to work at Romans Hospital. She was a counselor there, you know. So I know out firsthand, you know, we're dealing with all these people that's, you know, mental problems running around out here in the streets, you know, and drug addictions, of course, you know. And that's really, you know, wow, it's so horrible, you know, just to see the people, you know, all slumped over and, you know, just drugged out, you know, out of their mind. And you know, it's horrible. It's really horrible. So, you know, And then they try to get cash, you know, any kind of way that they can, you know, which is we all know, you know, it's very dangerous, you know, for the economy. So, it's hard on us. Hard on the people.
We also got an email from Susan who writes, I'm currently fighting a ticket received from premium parking at the town center garage because I apparently didn't succeed in using the app for parking, even though I thought I got a message saying I had paid for 12 hours. Hate QR codes. My partner doesn't even own a cell phone. And that's tricky because you have to have a cell phone then and be adept at all that stuff for a lot of these payment methods, don't you, EJ?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Right? You have to have the system. You have to have a cell phone. You have to be connected in some way to be able to use these services, right? So that can be problematic. You also think about it from a rural versus urban, you know, phenomenon. And people in the rural areas probably have less access to a lot of these sort of digital infrastructures that allow for this. That's problematic. That's some of the risks that we have to be concerned with, you know, system failures, privacy concerns, cybersecurity threats. You know, these are all risks that we have to be concerned with as it relates to moving towards this cashless society.
Yeah. What else would we be losing as a society if we get rid of cash? I mean, kids learn the value of money through cash and allowance and spending. I mean, they're the Salvation Army bell ringers. They're street buskers. They're people like you, James, trying to sell street vibes. What do you feel like we'd be losing as a society if we didn't have those cash options?
Well, we'd be losing a lot, I believe, you know, because like we were saying, you know, the economy is built on, it was built on money. So, I mean, so why try to take it away, you know, and make it more difficult, you know, for people to get paid, you know, you know, to, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I mean, I'm totally against that. So keep the money alive. Keep the money alive, people. Keep it alive, you know. We have to do that. We really do. Yeah, like I said, and my main point is, like I say, it's tangible. It's just like having gold, you know. If you go buy gold, stock up on gold, I mean, it's like money in the bank.
Yep.
Exactly,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So,
what you got.
Right, yeah. It's the value. It's the value. Because like it's just like, you know, elements of plastic, stuff like that. It doesn't have a real high value of it. You know what I'm saying? That's why it's so cheap to buy. You know what I'm saying? So Exactly.
Well, this has been a wonderful conversation. I've been talking with Miami University Associate Professor of Economics, Ijindu Ume, and Street Vibes distributor, James Davis. Thank you both so much for your time today. It's been
a real
pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Yes. EJ.
Up next, we'll hear from Congressman Warren Davidson about proposed legislation that would require businesses to accept cash. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're talking today about trends toward a cashless society and what that means for all of us. Congressman Warren Davidson, a Republican representing Ohio's 8th Congressional District, has a proposal to address the issue. He joins me in this recorded interview to discuss it. Thanks for being here, Congressman Davidson.
Thank you. It's an honor.
Your proposal, the Payment Choice Act, would require businesses to accept cash. How would that work?
Well, the currency says on its face, legal tender for all debts, public and private. And that's gone out of fashion. And, you know, people appreciate being able to use plastic for the most part. Cards make up the vast majority of retail transactions today. And in some places, they've even already said, you know, we only accept some form of electronic payment. We don't accept cash anymore. We would say that if you're a retail business, customer-facing business, you have to be able to take cash from the public. So that's part of the condition. We set a limit at $500. So, you know, you wouldn't necessarily have to sell cars and houses in cash, but, you know, you ought to be able to go to a Reds game and send your son or daughter up to grab a hot dog and pay cash.
In your view, why shouldn't a business have the option of going cashless?
Well, the currency says legal tender. So if you're going to have a national currency and defend the dollar, then you should make it so that it is the currency that is in use. The reality is the currency that's in use today, we still call it dollars, we still measure it in dollars, but really it's operated by private networks. The big thing is it's operated by someone else fundamentally. The beauty of cash is that when two people agree to a transaction, you don't really depend on an intermediary to kind of broker the transaction. So in a case of a normal retail transaction, you've got, you know, the customer, the store owner, and really you've got Visa and banks, you know, at least a third party involved in the transaction. But you could see a future where an intermediary would say, well, we don't really approve of what you want to transact, so your transaction's canceled. And when you can pay cash for it, you're not dependent upon a third party to consent to the transaction. It really is between you and the person selling the good or service.
There are people out there who really trust cash more than other forms of payment, more than credit cards and these other things. What do you think are some of the reasons behind that?
Well, there are a lot of unbanked people in the country, millions of people, and you know they're not confident because you know they might have a hard time getting normal access to banks. They don't like paying ATM fees, for example. And they also feel like if they put the money in the bank, sometimes, you know, they've had situations in the past where their bank charges fees for overdraft or things like that. It's hard to overdraft cash. You either have it or you don't. And so people make the choice to say, well, I feel more comfortable with cash.
Do you have any sympathy for the argument that it can be a hassle for a business to have enough cash on hand to make change, for example?
I get the downsides for some businesses. They found it very convenient and the accounting's easier. But if you've got a $100 bill, no matter how many times you use it, it's worth $100. If you do that on a credit card, every single transaction's diminished by 2 to 5%. So it goes down. The buying power of every dollar is hurt just because the means of transaction. Now, Visa appreciates it. They're making lots of money for it. They don't mind at all. But if you look at a future that really is disintermediating players like Visa and MasterCard, this is the appeal of cryptocurrency. If it stays account-based, then you really have the same third-party challenge. It's just a different company, and you don't really get rid of the intermediaries. If you go to a future that resembles cash, where you have custody of your own digital money, then you can move it in a permissionless way to whomever is on the other side of a transaction. You're not waiting for approval by the government or the bank or the account holder. But a lot of people want a future where the government approves every part of every transaction because they say they want to catch bad guys. And that's why the IRS was going to spy on everybody's bank account if they had $600 worth of transactions in it. And, you know, you want to catch people that are cheating on their taxes, but you also want your own freedom. And so the only way to really protect privacy is to keep it permissionless like cash.
You know, a cash allowance has traditionally been an important part of childhood to help teach the value of money, that math that comes into counting. I mean, I can't imagine putting a Visa gift card under the pillow for the tooth fairy. Is all of that part of the equation with this too?
Yeah, I think, look, Ohio did a nice thing, and you know, hopefully other states copy, but we've added financial literacy as a graduation requirement. And, you know, as important as it was for me to learn what gerunds are when I was in high school English, I'm pretty sure that being able to balance a checkbook has proven more useful. I don't know that I learned that in school, but I learned it from having a paper route. Those things have gone by the wayside as well. But the ability to just balance a checkbook or figure out what you owe for taxes, things like that, are really fundamental. And I think it's important that states like Ohio are adding financial literacy. People do graduate knowing the basics. And cash is an important way to do that. Like I say, you can't really overdraw cash. So it's a better starter system than a checkbook. Checkbooks are pretty much obsolete too. But we have so many young people that they're just racking up massive debt. It feels like you can keep spending all the way up until they hit the credit limit. They have very little income and they get $5,000 or $10,000 worth of debt, but that are working jobs that pay, you know, $15,000 to $25,000 a year while they're trying to go through school. And there, they're also loading up on debt. So they're not really doing a service but to young people by early in their lives, loading them up with ways to go deeper and deeper in debt. And it should come as no surprise that you have lots of risk of default on student loans because people don't really have the financial literacy to know what they're committing to often.
I want to talk a little bit more about this idea of governments creating a digital currency, kind of like a version of Bitcoin, but it's backed by the federal government. I want to hear more of your thoughts on that.
Well, most countries around the world are at least studying and developing paths where they could implement a central bank digital currency. And this is like 180 degrees different than Bitcoin. Maybe the only thing it really has in common with it is it's digital. But, you know, in China, they've imposed it, I think, in four of their 33 provinces, last I heard. But their government issues that. They take away your bank account. And a lot of people call this programmable money. So it can be set to expire. It can come with strings attached. The government literally sees every single transaction. And, you know, they say in China that's just to keep their citizens safe. But as an American, you're like, well, I'm not sure I want the Chinese government, you know, party to every single transaction I'm at. And, you know, the reality is most people wouldn't want that for the United States of America. You know, pick whichever president you've got in the United States right now. But some people love President Trump, some people don't. But flip that, some people love President Obama or maybe a future, you know, President Bernie Sanders or AOC or somebody like that. And they'd say, well, I don't really want them to have all the details about my transactions. The reality is don't create that power for the government in the first place, and no one has to fear an authoritarian system where it could be abused. The architecture is really important. That's why, like, Bitcoin establishes a system where they don't trust anyone. It's a total different architecture. There's not, like, a central authority. There's no headquarters for Bitcoin. The transactions are approved in blocks, so they're somewhat anonymized. They're not truly secret, but they are private. And, you know, the central bank digital currency might have some level of privacy where not everybody would know who made this transaction, but the central government would know everything about every transaction. And right as we've been working on some of this, you know, the Canadian truckers were prohibited from accessing their own bank accounts because they were protesting over COVID. And regardless of your thoughts about their protest or COVID, the idea that the government would say, well, since you did something we don't approve of, you can't have access to your bank account, seems pretty crazy. So right now, while that seems crazy to most everybody, let's ban it and make sure that future doesn't happen.
So where does the Payment Choice Act stand? Is this a priority for congressional leadership?
It's an issue that historically Democrats supported more than Republicans. We voted on it, I think, two Congresses ago, and it had all Democrats in my Financial Services Committee vote for it, and about half of the Republicans. And when you have a Republican majority, you know, generally you're not going to see a bill go to the floor without at least half of the majority party supporting it. But over time, it's become more controversial. Some Republicans feel like telling businesses that they have to take cash is too much government. And some Democrats have gotten to the point where they really want the government to have more control over more things, which is really kind of different, I mean, than where the left was ideologically for a long time.
Well, I've been talking with Congressman Warren Davidson, a Republican representing Ohio's 8th Congressional District. Thank you so much for your time today, Congressman Davidson.
Thank you. I really appreciate the discussion.
Up next, will President Trump pardon Reds legend Pete Rose? This is Cincinnati Edition.